My name is Lexi. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm a member of the thriving Sunday night campfire group of Apple Valley, California. When I got called Monday, by my wonderful friend, Polly Pistol. I was actually expecting to be asked to speak at the Seal Beach Group speakers meeting in California. Because a friend of mine had told me that she'd been in touch with Polly and that they probably wanted me to come out there to speak. Now, if I had known what Polly's intentions were, I probably would have said yes, but probably would have let the answering machine answer the phone and then contemplated it for a minute. When I talked to Judy that evening, she informed me that this was a large group, which, you know, I go to the Southern California Convention usually, and that's about the same size as this one. And I've spoken there once, but it's been a while. And my husband told me this morning as I was getting on the plane that God had a reason for me to be here. And I tell you right now that the reason why I'm supposed to be here tonight is to practice the 12th step of Alcoholics Anonymous, working with others so that I can stay sober. And that's what it's about. That's why I'm here. I am here so that all of you can help me stay sober one more day. And that's the purpose of this program. I want to point out that anybody that says that an alcoholic can't get sober obviously hasn't come to Minneapolis lately. And I also want you to know that I've been asked on several occasions this evening if I'm nervous. And I was fine until just about now. And my status has changed dramatically. But then again, I know there's some people, Greg, of course, and Ann, and Aaron, that are going to help keep my ass up here in case I fall. So, thank you. A little closer, please. Jody found it necessary to bring me in here earlier and show me these closed-circuit TVs. I told her my main concern was to make sure my nose was blown and there weren't any funny black things in the corners of my eyes. And being the self-centered alcoholic that I am, I went to the bathroom to take care of both situations before we got up here. The important thing to do tonight is tell you in a general way what used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I'm going to try to give you that information to the best of my knowledge with the most honesty I can muster. My sponsor isn't here tonight, but some of you may know Goldine, and I want to make sure that you know who she is, so that in case you hear any foreign information that might sound a little obscure, you can call her and check with her to make sure I told you the truth. With the grace of God and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have not found it necessary to drink or use any mind-altering chemicals since November 22, 1976. I want you to know that it truly is the grace of God that I am here tonight. Because of my own opinion and my own feelings and the things that I strived up in my head to do when I came into the program, my intentions were not to stay. I had no intentions of becoming a happy little member of this group. I did not like Alcoholics Anonymous. You threatened my social life. You threatened taking away my best friend, and I didn't appreciate that. It took until this last fall for me to realize that 23 years ago, my mother was lucky enough and privileged enough to become a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it took until last fall for me to realize that with her gracious God, she's the one that planted the seed in my life and made it possible for me to find a program They helped me finally figure out how to live in this world with the rest of those people out there that I felt so separate and far away from. I had seen what alcohol can do in the home. I had been a part of it. And I swore off alcohol at the age of 9 years old. I swore to my father that I would never take a drink of alcohol. And just like all of us who swear off this thing called alcoholism, I meant it down to the very roots of my toes. I resented alcohol. I knew that it took away my mother, that it made our family very dysfunctional, if you like that word, and that I was pissed off for a long time because we weren't like the Brady Bunch. They slept in the same bed, mom and dad, that is. My parents hadn't slept in the same bed most of my life. I don't remember much affection in our home. I remember a lot of violence and cursing and all that good stuff that comes with this disease. So I had no intentions of following my mom's path. And when I was 11 years old, I went to an auction in El Monte, California, and I was there with some young cowboys and girls that thought they were hip, slick, and cool. And I proceeded to drink about 2 packs of Coors and black out. Now, when I took that first drink, just like the insanity that they talk about with this disease, I had plenty of head knowledge of what could happen. But you see, just like most of us, I knew my case was different. And I knew that if I didn't follow the patterns that my mom had preceded me with, that I couldn't possibly turn out the way she did. Besides, I was too young to have that problem. I figured you had to at least be in your 40s to have a problem with booze. So I got drunk that night, and it started the merry-go-round that I experienced for the next few years. And I can't tell you that I hated alcohol when I first drank it. I thought that it was just what you did to be a part of. But the one thing that I knew that alcohol was good for was the most important thing, and that was is if it anesthetized me and made it easier for me to communicate with all of you and made me feel just a little bit more comfortable with myself, that it was an important thing to do. So I spent the next 4 years doing the best job I could at destroying myself and the relationships that I was a part of, not knowing that it had anything to do with drinking or with my attitude or my lack of ability to be a part of. And I wasn't to find that out until I walked in the rooms with Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't want to go into a lot of detail, but I want enough for the newcomer to know a couple of important things. If you do feel unique and different, you're in the right room, because we all suffer from that. Somebody was commenting today when they came and picked me up from the airport. They were concerned about reading in front of this group because it was so large. And I pointed out to this beautiful lady that at least a third of us were looking for Mr. Wright or Mrs. Wright. There's another third that know the rest of us are thinking about them. And I told her, I said, you're lucky enough that they probably won't even hear if you put a line in that that doesn't even belong there. Because we're all here, because we're not all there. I like that, Annie. The last few months of my drinking were of the typical variety. I had problems with remembering what I did when I drank. I ended up in situations that were embarrassing and disheartening. I got kicked out of a school. Now, I want you to know I wasn't a social butterfly there or anything. I wasn't on the cheerleading squad. I wasn't blonde and beautiful. I was a horseback riding tomboy with an attitude and a filthy mouth. And when I got called into the vice principal's office and asked to leave the campus, it came to absolutely no surprise to me. I wasn't exactly shocked. I was sort of bummed out, but I wasn't shocked. And I left that campus and I went home. And then things started to go downhill from there. I'd gotten in some trouble. Didn't have anything to do with my drinking, I want you to know. It was circumstances and people and situations. And that was always my problem. I was misunderstood, and all of you were picking on me. I ended up leaving my mother's home and running away. And I went over to one of my good buddies' house to go where it was safe haven. And you know, I found out harshly that evening, unless I had the stash or the booze or the car, that they weren't going to be there for me. And I want you to know that there isn't one person out of my past that has broken their back trying to find me. You know? That's amazing. But they have their own stories. And I really don't want to get into it. I did for a while, but I don't do that anymore. I ended up finding out about a place out in the Palm Springs area called Turnoff Incorporated. My mother had been going out to this young people's recovery house for a while. And now, mind you, she had no idea, and I mean this seriously, my mother had no idea that I was drinking. She thought I was suicidal, self-will run riot. She told me that on a regular basis. Now, I didn't know what that meant, but I knew it didn't sound good, and I didn't like it. And it applied, because everything I did was very rapid, very rigid, and spontaneous. I was a very fast-moving individual, because if I stood still long enough, then I'd have to be with me again. And I didn't like who I was. She had suggested psychiatry on more than one occasion, and that scared the daylights out of me, because I knew that if anybody picked my brain long enough, they'd know what was inside, they'd lock me up, and I'd never get out. Because I didn't like what I was thinking, and I don't dare tell any of you, because if you know what I'm thinking, you're going to know I'm loony too. And I can tell you the only time that I was honestly uncomfortable when I was still out there is when I didn't have booze in my body. And when I came in here and saw people slip and have to go back out, it made absolute perfect sense to me. Because they tell us that sobriety is an abnormal state for anybody who suffers from this disease. So the miracle that we are all sitting here tonight and enjoying a day of sobriety is absolutely against our being. Against everything in this body. Because even though I may stand before you with 19 and a half years of sobriety, I am still a full-blown alcoholic in abstinence. And it sits there, cunning, baffling, and powerful, and it waits for me patiently to make that choice and to deny myself where I truly belong, and that is in this meeting tonight. Because the minute I start thinking that I am separate and different from you, I stand the chance of possibly having to pick up that bottle and think that I can drink like a normal human being. And that's never been the case for me. Anyway, I'm starting to calm down a little. My mother had been talking about that recovery house, and I ended up going out there out of duress. Actually, what I went out there for was a weekend. I was going to relax. I was tired. I just wanted a few days to get away from everything and regroup. And I had heard that this place was near Palm Springs. And I had watched those old beach party bingo movies, you know. And there was this one in particular, gosh, where they went on this spring vacation. It was like a 60s movie, and they all went out to Palm Springs for the spring vacation shindig. And I figured that probably what this place was like was sort of a resort atmosphere. And that I could take my little carry-all case with my little bikini and short shorts and halter top. And then I would probably sit by the pool. And some spiritual member of Alcoholics Anonymous would read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous to me. And that I would just sort of absorb sobriety, I guess. I didn't know there was work involved in sobriety. So I went out there. And I want you to know that I was an outstanding member of Alla Team. Even did some circuit speaking in Alla Team, I want you to know. Now, I wasn't going to tell those folks that I was getting stoned every 3 days. And that I never once practiced the 12 steps that Alla Team suggests also. I did a lot of lip singing, if you will, to Alla Team. And I hung out with the exact kind of people that I was called towards. They were just like me. Does it make any difference if you were in a bar, or if you're in a meeting, or if you're in a church? If you want to find somebody at your level, water seeks its own level, you're going to find them. So unfortunately, I got nothing out of that program, except that I knew where AA was. So I will always be grateful to Alla Team, because it helped get me here, folks. It helped get me here. And that's the main thing that's important. For anybody who practices the Al-Anon and Al-Anon program, it has a lot to give. But there was one problem. I had already started drinking before I walked through the doors of Al-Anon. So it didn't do me much good. It's a scary thing. We do pass it on to our kids. My mother had no idea that I was like her. She just knew I was a little weird. Anyway, I went out to that recovery house and I met a gorgeous woman named Ann Hardy. And she was sitting in front of a sewing machine sewing a pair of jeans for her husband. Big, 250-pound, 6'3", huge man with beaming dark eyes who could look right through you. And what he saw in me was a scared, insecure kid that was full of crap. And I was in the house for about 2 months. Mind you, I was supposed to stay for a weekend. I ended up staying for 7.5 months. Because after that weekend, I realized what I was going to be going back to if I left that house, and it scared the daylights out of me. I had gotten enough knowledge out of the 3 days that I was supposed to be there to know that what I was heading towards and what was going to happen to me next would be something that shouldn't happen to any human being. And that I was on a self-destructive course to hurt the person that didn't deserve to be hurt. And I think that's what's true for all of us. We're killing the wrong person, folks. When we're out there drinking and doing other things and destroying ourselves, we don't realize that what we carry is a disease that may not be curable, but it can be arrested. And the miracle for Alcoholics Anonymous is that we work better than anything out there. There's been a lot of programs that have tried to copy us, but they forget one thing. You got to stay out of the property and prestige to make recovery work, and I'm a firm believer in that. There's a lot of people that try to make money off recovery. And God love them. I believe that their intentions most of the time are right and true. But I think the bottom line is that if I get a call at 3 o'clock in the morning and it's a woman who wants to stay sober more than she wants to drink, I'm going to get in my car and I'm going to go sit with her. And I'm going to have a cup of coffee and help her make it till the next day. And that's all that matters. I ended up staying that 7.5 months. I got a lot of head knowledge. And I became a young, cocky, opinionated, I don't want to say member of Alcoholics Anonymous, but somebody that went to meetings. And I moved in with a wonderful couple that looked like Ken and Barbie. And they owned this really nice house in an area called Rancho Cucamonga up by a country club. Now, I've never been in a country club. And I grew up in a little town in California. Well, it's not really a little town, but it was for the area it was in. I grew up in an area called La Puente. And this was Lowriderville. And in fact, me and Jody saw a car on the freeway here, and I said, they're lost. They should be in L.A. It was bright purple, lowrider. I felt totally at home after I saw that car. Anyway, I'd grown up in the town of La Puente and going to Rancho Cucamonga where people played golf and lived in nice houses on the hill was a whole new trip for me. I want you to know that my intentions and my motivations were in the wrong place. But I am grateful today that Ann and Sam didn't try to stop me. Because what I got to experience in sobriety helps me to be able to stand up here before you tonight. I became a professional geographic in sobriety. If things got a little too heavy or a little too serious, I left. And I always tried to make sure that you wondered what you did wrong to lose me. Those people were good to me. But I misunderstood what was important. And I found it necessary to start taking their inventory. I had already taken mine. I was quite a victim. But, you know, it was important for me to remind these people the important parts of life, facts, everything else. I used to go to meetings in the Ontario Upland area and tell old-timers how they should work their program. And then I wonder why I felt isolated and alone. And for some reason, I started going to meetings, and people began to walk away from me. And I'd raise my hand all the time in meeting, I want a chair, you know. And they stopped calling on me. This was an ego destroyer. This was very good for me. But at the time, I resented it. And for some reason, the lights went on after a while, and I realized what was happening.
But what I did was I began to wonder why other people didn't want their program the way I thought they should. And what I came to find out is that first it was important for me to work the program. And then it didn't become so necessary to keep my eyes on the rest of you. What was important for me to take care of myself, make sure that I stay sober, and that I close my mouth and I open my ears and I hear the importance of sobriety. And today the thing that is wonderful for me is that I don't care if you have 5 days or 50 years, as that wonderful gentleman does. The message is alive and well in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I need to listen to the message, not the messenger. The rest of it comes. It's taken me a while to get that information through my thick skull. Anyway, the gentleman in that house had a chemical dependency problem. He had a problem with methamphetamine. He was claiming sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was having trouble with this. And I was very bitter and angry. And I went back out to turn off to tell on him. And Sam Hardy informed me that other people's sobriety is none of my business. And that what he chooses to do is of his own choosing. That it is not my position to make ideals and choices for this individual. And that was a shock to my system. Because that's when I figured out, you need to pay attention to your own recovery. And lovingly put his hand on my shoulder and told me, Lexi, because we love you, you will not be allowed back at turnoff until you learn to take responsibility for your own actions. And it hurt like nothing I've ever felt in my life. But it was the most wonderful hurt and pain I've ever felt. Because I believe it was a beginning for me to find out what I really needed to know. And that was is that I have to be one among you, not separate from you. And that's essential for my sobriety. And today I practice that. I'm not so interested in what you can do for me as far as on an individual basis or a material basis. What I'm interested in is that we both come here for the same reason. That is because we have a disease and because we want to stay sober. And where you come from and what you do is not the issue. Because there could have been plenty of reasons for you to look at me and say, well, you're too young, you haven't drank long enough, you didn't drink the right booze, you didn't grow up in the right area, you aren't the right race, you aren't the right religion, you aren't the right sex. And I'm so glad that nobody had any conditions on sobriety. Because there have been groups before us that tried that. It didn't work. And thank God for Dr. Bob, because he kept Bill from doing that to us, I hope you know. Because Bill had all kinds of wonderful ideas that could have killed Alcoholics Anonymous. He was going to make money, don't you know? And thank God that we work as a group. That it's not the vote of a one, but it's the vote of a whole that makes Alcoholics Anonymous stay the way it is. And that we're to pass on the legacy that Judy was talking about at dinner to those people who are new in this program. And remember to teach each other that the traditions are also essential for sobriety. It's not just the steps. And that I need to practice both the 12 steps, 12 traditions, and understand the 12 legacies of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's what I need to teach those girls that I am fortunate enough to have in my life and sponsor. And that the rest of it is irrelevant. Anyway, I want you to know that I had a lot of growing to do. I moved back to the area of the 502 Club, Sobriety Capital of the World, thank you very much, in Covina, California. And I was fortunate enough to be a part of that group and learn from a lot of old-timers that were very good to me. But I also was 17 years old by that time. I decided I was a woman of the world. And I was going to look for Mr. Him. And I had an idea what he looked like and what he was going to be in my life. And he had on Levi's and a flannel shirt, blonde hair, beard, and smoked Marlboros. And I had nearly 2 years of sobriety at that time. He had 9 months. So I didn't want to be pegged as a 13-stepper, so I waited till he was a year sober. And then I went in for the kill. I'm happy to report he is still sober today, despite my help. We're no longer together. Anyway, we were going to play house without any rules or prior knowledge as to how to do this. And we moved in together, and I want you to know we were high-class folk. We drank a lot of water and ate a lot of round steak. Didn't have two pennies to rub together. And I resented him for this, because I wanted to be an outstanding member of Alcoholics Anonymous that people would look at and say, now, isn't she just wonderful? So I started taking his inventory. And he didn't come out in real good shape. But anyway, we lived together for about 2 years, and I stayed sober. I was an active member of a few groups in the Covina area. And then God decided to move us to Riverside, California. Now, at the time, I had no idea why we were supposed to go there. I didn't even know where this town was. I had no idea what it was like. I was very comfortable where I was at. What ended up happening is God blessed me with a wonderful woman named Goldine, who has been my sponsor for over 14 years. And I feel blessed every day that I've had that woman in my life, because what she did patiently and kindly was treat me in a wonderful way and teach me about sobriety. Not just being dry, not just, you know, without any type of mind-altering chemical, but actually what sobriety is supposed to mean and how we do take these principles outside of this room tonight and practice them at a job, in a relationship with our children, with our siblings, our parents, etc. And what kind of big book are we that other people read when we're out there? Do they like what they see? And if I run into that woman that I saw at the stop sign who cut me off in a meeting that evening, hopefully the last thing she didn't see was one of my fingers. These are important little things, because I am here to tell you that I have been that individual that they've seen in that meeting after I've been abusive verbally or in other ways. Bobby chose to go back to the Covina area, and I stayed in Riverside. And I got involved in the Casablanca Into Action group of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'd become a regular member of that group and was really involved in sobriety. And I was busy doing things and seeing people and going places and all that good stuff. And I thought that I was Miss Cutesy of Alcoholics Anonymous and had it all together. And gone out. Alcoholics Anonymous were much too sick for me. So I went to look for a normie. Do any of you know what the hell a normie looks like? Do you know what they think like? Do they smell like us? I could not point out a normie if he stood in front of me with a neon sign that said absolutely normal across his head. In fact, he would probably look so unattractive to me that I would have had nothing to do with him. But I was going to go out with the knowledge in this head and find him again. You know, I'm not going to lead you people to believe that the relationship area was any problem for me. God had some interesting plans for this alcoholic. So with all of my knowledge, I was working at an auto accessory place in Riverside. That was surrounded by an auto junkyard. And I found him in the junkyard. And he was Latino, and he had muscles. He called me Angel. I fell in love. I wasn't to find out till 2 years later
at the first 2 weeks that I met this young gentleman, he was also on LSD. He was just so happy. He smiled a lot. Now I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the denial of alcoholism, and I know Don is going to love this. This is great stuff. I'd known this guy for about, a year and a half prior to getting involved with him. And he had picked me up from my house a couple occasions and drove me to work when my car was broke down. And I remember one day in particular, we're driving to work, and somehow my sobriety came up. I don't know if I was trying to inform him because he needed to be impressed with my recovery. But, I guess I mentioned something about being sober. And, you know, he informed me he had been to them A&A meetings. But his case was different because it was a court card. He had been picked up for drunk driving. Now me, in my infinite wisdom, thought, well, shoot, poor guy had a bad break. So we got involved. Now, I didn't take him to my home group, okay? I want you to know that. I didn't introduce him to my sponsor. I wasn't going to tell her the truth. I just told her about him as Lexi sees it. So I took him to my old home group in Covina, 45 minutes away. And we sat down in the Sunday morning meeting at the Covina 502 Club. And I'm introducing him to everybody, and I'm just so happy because this is my boyfriend Joe. Isn't he cute? You know? And he wants to be with me. And then they get to asking for alcoholics in the room. And next thing you know, I look over and Joseph's raising his hand. And me and my denial said, now, in my head, isn't that cute? He wants to be so much a part of my life, he's willing to even say he's an alcoholic. No, you know? Open up and see what's going on. Anyway, we ended up getting pregnant, and then we got married because that's how everybody does it, right? We got married. And the day of our wedding, he informed me that he and his buddy Marty had ran around in a field from the police officers the night before, celebrating his manhood, you know, bachelor party and all that good stuff with helicopters and all the rest of that. And I'm sitting there looking. This is more of an Al-Anon meeting, isn't it? Anyway, I'm sitting there looking at him. I'm thinking, he's not really saying this. And the knot in my gut was saying, run like hell. But my little disease said, you can fix this guy. He needs you. As Jim Ryan used to say, he needed me like he needed another nostril. Anyway, we got to the point in our relationship where it was a choice. He had told me, you either stop going to Alcoholics Anonymous or you lose me. And I made the obvious choice and I stopped going to AA for about 4 months. And I came inches and seconds from doing lines with this man. He had a $350 habit a week on methamphetamine, plus probably drank 2 to 3 packs of booze, any type of beer he could get his hands on a day. And I used to call Goldie in on a daily basis and give her updates on Joseph's insanity. And she and her wonderful husband, Bob, saved my life. They were a godsend for me. And when the thought occurred to me that he and I would argue over the bottle or whatever chemical he was using, and that eventually I would outdo him because I knew I would, that it would no longer be necessary for us to be together, then we'd end up killing each other. Because I know what my disease is like. And I know what position you take if you get in between me and my alcohol. And you're going to die. And he would have been in bad shape. I know what he was like when I tried to stop him. But he's fine today. And I know this will come as a shock to you, but we're not together anymore. Because one night the light went on in my head. And I knew that if I stayed home that particular evening, that I might end up drinking. And I went back to my meeting where I belonged. And I went up to my sponsor and I told her, I'm done trying to change him, but I know that I need to do something for myself. Otherwise, I will end up drinking again. And she had told me all along that God is going to give me the path to take when that is supposed to end. But I know today that it is no longer for me, or no longer necessary for me to play martyr or be heroine. And that if it comes between you and I getting through that door first, and it's a matter of me staying sober, I'm going to outbeat every one of you. Because it has to be my sobriety. And that may sound selfish to some people in this room, but I have come inches and seconds away from taking that first drink. And I know that for me today, it is essential to be in this room tonight. And I guess I keep saying that because I've figured out why I'm supposed to be here this weekend. Anyway, things changed for me. Somebody was asking me earlier, I think it was Paul from Rapid City. Have you ever been to a conference this big? And we were talking about a few things. And he was asking me about moving to the area of Victorville. Now, I want you to know that I actually live in a town called Apple Valley, as I was saying. Now, I've been there for over 7 years, and I'm trying to figure out where the hell the apple trees are. There's a lot of tumbleweed, Joshua tree. We got a heck of a lot of sand, no water. It's very desolate, and it gets to be about 115 degrees during the summer. Now, if you go to meetings, got any links to get to meetings, this is a good testing ground. Because between your car and the meeting room, you end up sweating like a pig. But you go. And I go every week. I go to 3 meetings a week. I'm an active member. I'm involved in service. I've chaired conventions. And I work with newcomers. My name is on a 12-step list. And I make myself available. I ended up getting in a position to have another child out of wedlock. My mother jokingly calls me Fertile Myrtle. Was somebody who couldn't stay sober. And then God gave me a wonderful job, and God has a sense of humor. For any of you who come from where I come from, you'll understand. The closest I ever came to police officers was bushes, strange people's garages, and anywhere else that I could hide. And at about 14 years sober, a good friend of mine up in the high desert suggested that I might want to apply for a job at a police department. And I thought, you got to be kidding me. I'm not going to work with police officers. I don't want to even get near them. And God has a funny sense of humor. I ended up getting hired by this police agency and working as a dispatcher, telling cops where to go. Now, for any of you that are fortunate enough to work in law enforcement here this evening, I want to make sure you understand that I never told you over the radio what I really thought sometimes. And I learned a lot while working at that job. I worked hard. I raised a daughter and took care of things. And God gave me an income. And He gave me the ability to answer that 911 line. And when I had a girl that was drunk on the other end, I'd know what to say to her. And there was a reason why I was supposed to be in that police department helping those people. And it was all because of you. And for the first time in my sobriety, I was able to maintain a job over 9 months. On the first year anniversary at working at that location, I called my sponsor and said, see, I did it. I stayed. Because there were times when I thought about leaving. And the thing that Goldine has taught me is you make a commitment, you keep it. And then along the way, something wonderful happened. I stopped looking for Mr. Wright, and he hit me straight in the face in a uniform. I shook his hand, I walked away, and I thought, oh, shit. I I've been married to Russell Reckward for over 5 years. Well, we've been together over 5 years. It'll be 5 years of marriage this coming December. And I got to... The reason why this is such a miracle is, first of all, I want you to know that my record on relationships is 2 years. Well, actually, about 6 months, honestly. Then after that, it's just sort of a matter of hanging on. And the other thing that blows me away is that Russell's a normie. Doesn't have the disease. Doesn't care to. Don't drink. Likes us. My husband has gotten a lot of gifts from Alcoholics Anonymous. When my husband is in a position to pick up somebody who's under the influence off the street and he finds a 12-step, 12-tradition card in their pocket, he asks them, what happened? He's been known to take wet drunks over to the Alano Club in the town where he works and turn people like us over to the people that can help them. And that's because of the example that you folks have set for my husband. Because before we got married, he didn't have a clue what Alcoholics Anonymous was about. He had no idea that there was a program like this out there. He had heard of ANA, but he personally never had a reason to be here, thank God. He's the most wonderful, kind-hearted, and loving individual that I've ever known in my life. And I am grateful to be able to call him my best friend. Because God has been gracious and kind to me. And because you folks have taught me how to live, and you've given me a program to practice in my life on a daily basis, that I am okay enough with myself to know that having a wonderful, kind human being like that in my life is okay most of the time today. I don't try to analyze him, because I've figured out he doesn't think like me in the first place. And I'm so glad for that, because my children are pretty semi-stable. Because when mom is in one of her moods, they can always turn to dad. And he sort of keeps things balanced. Says thank you for sharing, Lexi, and gets on with the program. I, like a lot of us in Alcoholics Anonymous, are looking for those characteristics in those two children of mine that might be similar to ours. Now, I'm going to prejudge whether or not they need to sit in this room someday. And Russell doesn't care. And I'm so glad. What I need to do is pick apart my two beautiful daughters' heads and try to figure out what makes them tick. That's God's responsibility, not mine. And I'm glad that I get put back in my place. That I know that God doesn't have any grandchildren. That He takes care of every one of us individually, exactly the way we need to be carried and taken care of. And that I'm so glad that He took care of me when I was incapable of taking care of myself. And for the newcomer, look around you. Because these are your God people, folks. These are the ones that are going to be there for you when you're really not sure whether or not you still belong. And it's such a miracle, every one of us, that we have this opportunity. And for those days when I forget to appreciate what sobriety is about, God gently and graciously knocks me on the head and says, wake up, look around you. Get out of yourself and remember what's important. I was listening to our wonderful speaker for the 10 o'clock meeting and made reference to the fact that his favorite line in the Big Book had to do with the daily reprieve. And I know today that that is the case for me. Because when I spend too much time in tomorrow or I start analyzing how I screwed up yesterday, that I forget the most important thing is that I'd be right here, right now. And when I am here right now, I believe that is what they truly mean by sanity. Because the rest of it doesn't matter. I had to deal with something about a month ago. I found out that my sponsor has the nerve to move out of the state of California. That she didn't bother to ask my opinion. And I didn't find out from her. I was with a wonderful little gal that I sponsor that has about 90 days. And we had gone down to the place where she got sober. And we were going to a meeting, and a wonderful friend of Goldine's informed me, "Well, yeah, you know she's moving." And I said, "Moving where?" And she said, "Texas." And I thought, "What?" And she told me that Bob had gone to visit a friend, and while he was there, saw a house he liked and called Goldine and informed her they were moving. I hated that son of a bitch. And I got this poor newcomer with me, and I could care less about her sobriety. We're driving home. She's telling me important details about how hard it is to stay sober today, and I'm like, "Yeah, we'll get to you later." And all I'm thinking about is getting home, calling my sponsor, and informing her that she didn't ask my opinion on this. I told her that I didn't like her husband. She said, "Get in line." And then the thought occurred to me that that's what that 10,000-pound telephone is for. That I should pick it up and continue to call her. Because on that particular day, I already had her moved. I had problems going on. Now, she's not due to move till June, and this was like March, okay? I was thinking about all those problems that were going to go on in my sobriety and how I would need her and she wouldn't be there. You know, I've got a real close-knit relationship with my sponsor. I want what she has. And I'm about, I think, due to get off of here, I think. I don't know, when is, I got about, 20 minutes maybe? Cool. Okay. When I met Goldie Mahan, she was sober 18 years. She'd been married to the same man for 20 some odd years. And this impressed me. Her driver's license had her correct address on it. It took me a number of years to have my mother write my address in ink in her address book. Because on any given day, that grass over there looked a lot greener than this grass, and I would just go. For the newcomers, I'd like to suggest that it's best to tell your sponsor your plans ahead of time. They are much more successful at helping you if they know prior what you're planning to do with your life. I would call Goldine afterwards and then expect her to clean up the mess. And she would just say, "I love you, keep coming back." And she didn't have any real philosophical crap to lay on me. And that's what I was looking for. Now, if I had wanted that, I could have spent $90, lay on somebody's couch and tell some man with a wonderful big license on his wall, and hopefully tell him the truth, and he might be able to help me in that manner. But I've found out that sponsors are the same as what they talk about in the big book with psychologists, where it talks about we never gave him a fair break. I never gave Goldine a fair break because I never told her the truth. And how is a sponsor supposed to help somebody with truth when they don't hear truth? It's a real hard, puzzling thing. And then God has a crazy sense of humor, and he gave me a couple of me to sponsor. And I was sharing around the time of dinner that I've had to call Goldine on many occasions and first of all thank her for not firing me, and second of all apologize for all the crap I put her through, because I've been able to find out what it's like to deal with people that just sort of in passing say, "Oh, and I got a new relationship." Or, "I got a new job." Or, "I've changed addresses." And I do it sort of in this manner. Well, I feel for my sobriety that it was a good choice. Thank you. Anyway, I got a good enough voice. I can get this thing like that. She has been a godsend. My house is clean. I talk to her. I communicate in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I tell my husband what's going on with me. I show up when I say I'm going to. I do all the things that I didn't know how to do when I got here. And I know that I have not arrived, and there's always more information for me to learn, and more facts about sobriety that are important for me to get through my head to remember how to keep this thing. And that it is through all of you that I am able to learn that. I think that it is wonderful and an absolute miracle that one day Bill W. went in and found out about Dr. Bob and went to visit him and was fortunate enough to make this legacy begin. And that I know that a loving and gracious God worked through those men and Dr. Silkworth and everybody else associated with getting the program of Alcoholics Anonymous started. Because let's face it, if it was left up to somebody by themselves, Alcoholics Anonymous wouldn't be what it is today. And I wouldn't be privileged enough to be able to know that sobriety works. If you take nothing home with you this weekend, please take with you what John Ackerman says, and that is to remember that we want nothing but the best for you. And that if you are nervous and scared and feel alone this weekend, I'll give you some advice that was given to me at the Palm Springs Roundup when I had 7 months sober. I went into my sponsor's bedroom and sort of got in the fetal position on her bed because I'd been over there at the convention. And that particular roundup has about 3,000 sober alcoholics. And for somebody with 7 months, that's a scary proposition because I knew you were all thinking about me. And my sponsor, Andrea, turned to me and she goes, what's up? I don't know. I'm not having a good time. I feel numb. I don't want to be here. And she gave me a suggestion that you were practicing here at this convention this weekend. You people who are lucky enough to be hosts and hostesses here this weekend, you're the lucky ones. Because what she told me was to get my butt back over to that convention, look for just three people that looked as nervous or as scared as I was, go up and shake their hand and introduce myself. Hi, I'm Lexi. I'm an alcoholic. And you know what? It's been working for me ever since. Because it just took, I think, one person to get me out of myself. And then I forgot about the self-centeredness. And I had a terrific weekend. Get out in the middle of all of us. Look around you. Find that person that looks shook up and scared. And make a point to go up and introduce yourself. Let them know that they're in the right place. And that we're amongst friends here. We're amongst brothers and sisters. Just like in the Big Book where it talks about the Titanic. That have a common bond, except that in our case, it is a lifelong bond, as long as we stay in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's something that I never thought would have happened for me. If they had asked me when I first came to the program what I wanted out of sobriety, as you've heard a million times, I would have shortcut myself. Because what I have been given is a lot more than I thought I deserved. And I'm glad that God did not give me what I thought I deserved. And I'm glad he doesn't do that to any of us. Sometimes God's beauty comes in weird packages. And sometimes, in my opinion, I get the good confused with what I think is the bad. And if I remember that my judgment calls have always been a little bit tilted, then I'll be very, very lucky and very safe staying here with you. My opinion does count to a degree. I need to remember that I need to practice those 12 steps, and I do. But I also know that of myself I am nothing, and that the unity of Alcoholics Anonymous is so powerful and so tremendous, and it has saved this alcoholic more than once when I thought I knew better than you. And it's a good thing that we're all here. It's a good thing that Alcoholics Anonymous still thrives. If you're not involved in service, I recommend it highly. I have a sponsor who believes in it, and her Al-Anon husband, Bob, believes in it. And I have learned
that if I follow in her footsteps and do the next indicated step that she's done in her sobriety, that I may just stay here. In closing, I would like to say that, Judy, it was a wonderful thing that I talked to you on the phone. And I'm glad that Polly asked me to come here and that I was smart enough to listen to my gut that said you never turned down an AA request and that I am the one that's up here before you because I truly am the fortunate person in this room and that I ask all of you to have a good weekend, to give it everything you've got because Sunday's going to be here like that. It happens so quickly when we're having fun and laughing and talking to each other and getting into the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is not a soul one thing. This is a whole thing. And that's important to me. And that if I take home with me your smiling faces and your support and the things that I have heard from just a few people I've met this weekend, that I go home with a pot of gold and that I am lucky and I am rich this evening. And that every one of us has an opportunity to take this message this weekend back to that newcomer. You know, one of the most wonderful things that I've ever done to a newcomer is taking them to a huge convention. It's a scary thing for them. But if you notice the light in their eyes when they suddenly realize, wow, this thing is awesome. Other things that I put in my body. And here you've given it to me freely. The only thing I have to do to get this thing, if you're interested in the price tag, newcomers, let me tell you what the price tag is for you to be here. You have to give up fear, anger, resentment, isolation, loneliness, because you have saved my life. And I'm so grateful to you this evening. For those that are in the rooms out by the pool, I'm glad you're there. And I think the one thing that we could do tonight is remember, whether you're by the pool or you're in this room or you're in some other room, that when we get up and hold hands and say the closing prayer, one of the things I like to think about in my mind is that there is a hand holding a hand all the way around this world, and it's Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you.